Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. It is a beautiful day in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Pretty hot, but very sunny, and I love days like that because it really makes me happy. Today, I'll be discussing a topic that is very near and dear to my heart. I became a volunteer for hospice about 5 years ago after having had the calling for many years. And I have to say, I have had the incomparable privilege of getting to know hospice patients through weekly visits. And I've also had the privilege and great honor of sitting vigil at the bedside of those who are transitioning from this world to the next. Today I have on two women who have written a book called Changing the Way We Die, Compassionate End-of-Life Care and the Hospice Movement. Let me tell you a little bit about them. And Fran Smith is one of the authors. Her dad died without hospice after a 10-year descent into senility and physical incapacity. And the other author, Sheila Himmel, her father died peacefully in hospice care, and their losses planted the seeds for this book, Changing the Way We Die. Their fathers died around the same time, and the two friends talked about what happened and how they felt about it, and they realized that dying does not have to be an awful experience. So they wrote this book to lift hospice out of the shadows, to explore how its compassionate, holistic approach is changing the way Americans die and how its principles can be integrated into healthcare broadly to improve care for everyone. They discovered that hospice is much more than a way to relieve the discomforts of dying. It is a way to live. Fran Smith is a writer, editor, writing coach, and communications consultant. Her work has appeared in O, the Oprah magazine, Redbook, Salon, Good Housekeeping, Prevention, Health, the LA Times, USA Today, and dozens of other publications and websites. And she has won many awards for medical reporting, healthcare investigations, and feature writing. She shared a Pulitzer Prize as a reporter at the San Jose Mercury News. Sheila Himmel is a Psychology Today blogger and co-author of Hungry, A Mother and Daughter Fight Anorexia. She is a contributor to Restoring Our Bodies, Reclaiming Our Lives, and she writes for publications ranging from the New York Times to Eating Well to IEEE Spectrum, the magazine of technology insiders. Her work has appeared in USA Today, The Washington Post, The Rob Report, M Magazine, and the online magazine Obit. So let me introduce you. Let me open up the mics to Fran and Sheila. Okay. Fran and Sheila, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Randy. This is Fran.
Hi, Fran.
This is Sheila.
Hi. Well, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. And like I said, this is a topic that is very, very close to my heart. So let me first ask you, why don't you tell us what hospice is exactly? I mean, is this a place that we go to die?
Well, that's what many people think. And, you know, really that's kind of what we thought too. You know, the term hospice sounds like hospital, and it just kind of has a not very happy aura. Actually, we interviewed a woman who imagined hospice as kind of like a parking garage where there were just like, you know, people kind of stacked up in, you know, those kind of levels waiting to die. But the basic idea of hospice, yeah, and she, this woman actually ended up having a fabulous hospice experience when she cared for her mother at home. So the basic idea of hospice is it's really a philosophy and an approach to care. Most hospice care is provided at home, and the real idea is that the patient is a person, not just a disease, not a disease at all, and really with the right to have some control at the end of life. And hospice is a way of helping people live fully until they are no longer alive. And so it's not really, you know, it's not just focused on death and or even it's focused on comfort, but it's much more. It's more about empowering people, empowering families, and giving them the support to help them find meaning in that last part of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing. I was talking to one of the coordinators of the hospice that I work for, and she was saying how difficult it is sometimes to get doctors to put patients in hospice because they take it as a failure. I mean, doctors are supposed to heal, and they don't like to admit that they've gotten to the point where the person just needs to live out their life. So I thought that was very interesting, and I really hope that changes. So besides the experience that you both had with your father's passing, why did you want to write about hospice?
You know, it's funny. Once we started writing and people would find out what we were writing about, they would say, isn't that depressing? You know, why are you – they ask the exact same question. And as it turned out, the research, we learned so much, and so much of it was so surprising that it was not depressing at all. It was, in fact, the opposite for us. We're journalists, and, you know, what we're trained to do is, you know, find out information and interview people and figure out what are the right sources. And we did all that. But it also was personally really valuable for both of us. I mean, both of us still have our mothers and complicated relationships with our mothers, and it was very interesting how that also, you know, changed for us and our own, you know, ways of looking at our lives, you know, as we get older.
Right. I mean, it's so true. It's really wonderful that you did that because it is, like I said, it's so misunderstood, and it is a very loving thing to do for your, you know, for the patient, for the family. It's very empowering for the patient. And people say to me all the time, "How do you do that? Isn't that so depressing?" And I'm like, "No, it's not depressing at all. It's really wonderful. It's such a privilege and honor." So. Yeah, I think there's a whole lot of misconceptions. So death is considered a bad thing. Is it really possible to have a death that's good?
You know, that's really one of the most hopeful aspects of hospice. We followed lots of patients and families, and, you know, we really found again and again that people who had good hospice support really, you know, death is sad in any event, but in an odd way, people came out of this, families came out of this, and they would tell us, this sounds strange, but it was a really good experience. It was peaceful, calm, families, you know, when patients entered into hospice care before they were really, really at the very, very end, you know, so while they were still alert and able to enjoy their families and accomplish things, that people really found that time full of meaning and in an odd way, full of joy.
And the passing, when the person does pass, it is a very, very peaceful death, very peaceful. And I know the families always say that, you know, look how peaceful they are. They're so relieved that it was such an easy transition for their loved one. So doctors are afraid to, you know, to put patients in hospice. They're afraid to say, you know, well, this is the end. So how does a doctor predict when a patient is going to die? And I think they have to be within 6 months of passing. Is that correct?
Right. That in order to certify someone for hospice, a doctor has to say that if your condition or your disease ran its likely course, they wouldn't be surprised if you weren't alive in 6 months. So, but that is really guesswork. And it's coming up again. You know, doctors are not compensated for that consultation. They're compensated for procedures. Hmm. So part of the problem with doctors is that it's just not, you know, on their wavelength, and they're not trained to do that. To have these conversations with people, and I'm sure we all remember the whole brouhaha about death panels that came up when you know, this was first Obamacare first came out, that people would be having these panels saying how long can grandma, you know, grandma's off the list, that's it for her. So it's complicated in that way, but and doctors, we've recently given talks in hospitals, and doctors have come up to us afterwards. Like a young oncologist was very poignant. He said, you know, he's speaking to a family that afternoon, and he had to tell them that the family member's condition was terminal, and there was nothing medically that he could do. And he said it's just a really hard conversation. And it's a hard conversation for everybody. So, it isn't just that doctors are hiding this information. But, once they say the word hospice, people often have the reaction that, I'm going to die tomorrow and you're giving up on me. So it's a matter of It's a matter of training and starting this conversation earlier in the process.
Right, definitely. I mean, I would think that by the time people get to that point, that their family members would want them to stop having tests and probing and medication and all these things, and just really want them to live out their life in a very peaceful, comfortable way, and that's what hospice is about. And, so it seems like it would be something welcome, but I can imagine that it is a very difficult conversation to have. The other misconception that people have is they think of hospice as a place to go, but hospice is not necessarily a place. It can be you can be in a facility, in a hospital. You can be home. There's so many different ways. Being put on hospice doesn't mean the place that you're at. It just means the care and the support you're given. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. And in the book, we tell stories of any number of patients who were cared for in their own homes. And, you know, Sheila can talk about her father, because her father was in hospice care in a nursing home. And Sheila, you want to talk about that?
My father And that's actually getting to be more and more common, that extended care facilities have beds for hospice. Because in the United States, as opposed to England, where hospice started, it is not a residential facility. I mean, in England, basically, it is. These are residential facilities. But here, it is really mostly done by families in their own homes. And, and people always say, I want to die in my own home, which sounds peaceful and wonderful, except then when you realize who's doing the care, it's the family. I mean, the hospice is not there 24/7. They are available 24/7, but there's not actually, a person in your home changing the sheets and doing all of the work, the giving medicine and everything. That falls to the family. So it's really a family decision going into hospice. But as Fran said, my father was in a nursing home, and it was the nurses there who suggested that we might consider hospice, and it was the best thing we ever did. It was just the change in his care was just amazing. And we had hospice for 4.5 months, and I just couldn't say enough about the care that he got and that also we got. It was such a change in our anxiety level to have these people on call that we could always go to ask what might happen next and what's normal. It was just invaluable. And then also that we were there when he died, and it was very, very peaceful, and that was just it left us with that memory that's so wonderful.
Oh, that's so great to hear. I would say about half the people that I see are at home and half are in facilities. But down here, living in Florida, there's a lot of older people who don't have their families around, and that's really where the volunteers come in, because we become that visitor, or we become that person to sit by their bedside and hold their hand. And when the families can't be there, sometimes the families can't be there until they're on their last day or something like that. And so we provide that. But there is great support for the family, and I don't think that many people are aware of the aftercare, the bereavement care that is given as well to children, the family, and everything, right?
Right. Now, in our book, we have a couple chapters about a bereavement group that started specifically with a bereavement group for people who'd lost their spouses. And these people were, none of them wanted to go to this bereavement group. They all said, I'm not a group person, I'm not a therapy person, and I don't want to hear about other people's, personal stories and their bad times. I'm having enough trouble on my own. And but they were just having trouble functioning after, it was a few months after their spouses died. And they've gotten together and they started doing holidays together. They went to ball games. They started having Scrabble, things. And they just also found that they were able to talk to each other in a way that they were not able to talk to other people, even, other loved ones, because losing your spouse is such a profound loss that only somebody who's in it or has done it really, really understands, and that you need to kind of tell the story over and over again, and people who are in it will know that, and people
right.
who aren't will worry about you, that you're festering in your grief.
Right, Right.
So these people came together, and as it turned out, they are now three couples came out of this group. So it became a little, love nest, actually, too.
So
they, it was, it's very sweet. Yeah, they're very happy now. It's, 4 years later, and their lives have just completely turned around. And it's just a great example of how, life can go on, and hospice can help in that regard.
That's right. That's right. That's such a great benefit for the families and children. I know the hospice that I work for even has a kids camp for the bereaved children that have lost their parents. I think that's wonderful. That's the next avenue I'm going to try with this hospice that I work for. The other misconception is that everyone in hospice dies. Now, that's not necessarily true, because sometimes they benefit so greatly from the care that they resume living life the way it was before their illness. Not everybody dies in hospice. Some people come out of it. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, and that's the goal of hospice, is not to prolong life, but really to maximize the quality. And studies have shown that with really good palliative care, basically, good symptom control, good comfort care, people really do live longer, live better, and in some cases, people graduate from hospice. Their disease is cured, but they really, they really can kind of get back to a level of function and quality of life that they're able to just continue living, and they don't need that kind of support and aren't really even facing perhaps that six-month terminal prognosis.
Right, right. Yeah, and then there's patients who seem like they're going to go on, and then they pass the next day. It's very, very hard to tell. Very hard to tell how people will do. So if a family member is considering hospice, how do they go about finding the right place for their loved one?
Well, it's a little bit like, shopping for anything. You should ask friends and family who've used hospice, how was their experience? Because in most communities there are a variety of hospices. There are nonprofits that have been there for years, and there are companies that are for profits. And there are, so there's quite a choice, and you don't want to be at the last moment in the ICU and the doctor says, it's time for hospice, and boom, you can go shop around. That's not the time to do it. So and there are questions, in our book we have a sort of a series of questions that you could ask the hospice when you call, like, make sure that they're Medicare certified, find out what is the average caseload for the nurses, that sort of thing. And also, just in general, what's the reception you get when you call? The first impression. Is it a very officious, routine of, well, now you have to fill out this form and da-da-da, or is it, you can kind of tell a lot by the way that the person, welcomes you on the phone. You can get sort of the tone of the philosophy of the hospice from that.
Right. What about the patient's doctor? Do they often recommend a hospice that they work with? Or the facility that the person's in, do they, sometimes there's counselors that come in and, advise the family on different things. Are they helpful with that?
It really varies from case to case. In general, when a hospice referral is made, and you need your doctor to sign off on the hospice referral, but in general, when the hospital, the doctor, the social workers make a hospice referral, they send you to a program. I mean, they usually give you a name. Now that
right.
we found that that's not necessarily the best program. You know, different
okay.
hospitals and doctors have relationships with different hospice organizations. We write about one really, you know, awful case. We write in the book about in San Jose, California, where it was a very young patient, and her family got a referral. Of course, they just automatically called up that program, and this young woman just died in unrelieved pain. It was really a kind of awful thing. And the family later sued the hospice program, saying that really the staff was not well trained, and when they would call, you know, to report her pain and the fact that, you know, the medications really weren't keeping her comfortable, that they just really didn't get the kind of reception that, you know, trained staff would have done, and the situation
awful.
Wasn't taken seriously. And, you know, it was awful, you know, in every way, but one of the things that really struck us looking at that situation was this was a community with several really excellent, well-established programs. And the family just took the referral that they were given. And, you know, the hospital, there was nothing malicious, you know, in that. The hospital just had a relationship with that particular program. So again, it comes back to what Sheila was saying. It's really important in communities, in most communities, there are choices. It's really important to know the landscape and to shop around a bit. We found, you know, there are reviews on Yelp, just like there are restaurant reviews on Yelp. But really, you know, just talking with patients, people, friends who've been through it and finding out about their experiences can be really, really helpful.
Yes, I agree. And I mean, I know someone, actually my sister's aunt through marriage. She was in hospice, and my sister could not be there and her husband could not be there at the time that she was ready to pass. And she died alone. And to me, that is against everything that hospice stands for. No one should be dying alone.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so,
you mentioned, you mentioned volunteers, and I just wanted to say that is a huge component of hospice, that volunteers do so much of the work in hospice, of just being with the person who may or may not have family in the area, but nevertheless, the volunteers are trained to you know, just be there in whatever way the patient or the family needs, and that can turn out to be, you know, incredibly valuable.
Right. I mean, I've done. Sometimes I just go so that, you know, the wife can get out and go to the grocery store and run her errands. So it's, you know, I'm just there so that she can leave and feel comfortable that somebody's with her husband. You know, I've had situations where a patient is in the active process of dying, and the family members are just tapped out, and they just have to go sit down, you know. And they want somebody to come in and just sit with their, you know, their loved one. So there's many, many reasons that we go and we volunteer. Now, another thing, and this was something that I was unclear on before I started with hospice, is this something that the patient pays for or the family pays for out of their own pocket?
Generally not. Hospice is covered by Medicare. It's actually one of the great Medicare benefits. And it's also covered by most commercial plans, private insurance, covered by Medicaid. And so people who kind of fall through the cracks of all of those systems, there would be issues about payment. But 90% of patients in hospice care are paid, you know, are there through the Medicare hospice benefit. And that means the doctor bills, everything is just paid for by Medicare. If you're home, equipment comes to you, hospital bed, oxygen equipment is all delivered to your house, medications come to you. It's really an incredible benefit. The Medicare benefit also includes spiritual care for people if that's important to them. It includes practical support like, you know, social work support, help doing your taxes, all the things in life that kind of are hard to navigate when somebody, a loved one, is dying. And, you know, as we talked earlier, there's also bereavement support for the family after the death. So it's just, there's nothing really that approaches it for comprehensive services.
No, you're right. Though, you know, I have observed that there can be a tremendous amount of hoops and red, you know, and things you have to do to get somebody medication or get them approved on Medicare, and those things are always changing. Those hoops are always changing. I mean, I watched a patient who was he was suffering so bad and he couldn't communicate, and the nurse came in eventually, and he was in a facility, and the nurse came in, and I said to her, he's in terrible pain, and he's very, you know, anxious and everything like that. It took her 2 hours of paperwork to get everything that she needed, to raise his medication, to get him on some kind of anxiety medication. There was so much she had to do. I couldn't believe it. And I'm really hoping that that's something that changes. But I know that, you know, the healthcare system is in such a transition right now, and everything's changing. What has been your experience with Medicare?
Well, right. Actually, you know, at the moment, that's just getting worse. The paperwork.
Yeah.
There have been some very, you know, high-profile Medicare fraud cases with hospice. So they're, you know, really looking at every, you know, every expenditure, and you know, and the problem with hospice is that. It can help people live longer, which then violates the, you know, the concept of you know, that you're about to die, that it's 6 months or what, you know, that you need to be recertified for hospice. So the feds really are cracking down on all of that, and I know that doctors and nurses are complaining that, I mean, they've always had a lot of paperwork with Medicare, but it's just getting even more complicated with every expenditure being watched. It's too bad. I mean, we both visited a really wonderful facility in San Diego, California. And it was a long-established hospice, really active in the community. And they were involved in a Medicare fraud case, and it's still not clear what actually happened. But they ended up closing. You know, they just weren't able to challenge this. And so this really wonderful facility is now, you know, gone from San Diego.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, I just can see the frustration. But the people that are devoted to working in hospice are devoted to working in hospice no matter what the obstacles. It's such a great team of people that do this. So we're running out of time, but just so people have some kind of thing to fall on, some information to fall on, why don't you tell them what your website is and what your book is and how they can get it so that they can have this support when they need it? Because I know, like you said, you should have it before you need it. And we're all going to face this at some point in our life with our loved ones, with ourselves. So we should all be educated. So how can people get more information from you?
Right. Well, go to our website. We have information on buying the book and also a lot of resources that are very helpful for patients and for families. The website is www.changingthewaywedie.com. Same title as the book, Changing the Way We Die. And the book's available through all the major online booksellers. It's available. You can click on the link on our website, and it's available in lots of bookstores.
Okay, great. Okay. So That's great. I definitely will be having a copy of this book. I want to read it. I want to read your, you know, your point of view. And yeah, it's just a great reference to have. So anyway, I want to thank you so much. So we had Fran Smith and Sheila Himmel here talking about hospice. And I'm so grateful that you decided to come on my show and share your information, and it's just been so educational for everybody. I'm sure my listeners really enjoyed it, and I'm sure that they will get a great benefit from it. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. So for my listeners, we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. Randy is always spelled R-A-N-D-I, randygfine.com. And stop by my website, randygfine.com, and sign the guest book. I welcome feedback about my shows, so you can leave comments for me there as well. And please stop by to visit me on my Facebook page. Again, Randy, R-A-N-D-I, G, Fine, and like me. My page is filled with inspirational picture quotes that you can enjoy and share. And if you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower, because more followers will get this show the recognition that it deserves. Visit my blog at randygfine.com for even more inspiration and join the list of devoted followers there. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change.